Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air. And on today's program, my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, will be joined by a great guest. So let's get started.
And thank you for that, Zach. You know, we're living in a time when Christianity seems to be on the rise. People are constantly sharing their faith online. Spiritual conversations are happening at mainstream events. But are more hearts really being won over to God? That's the big question. Today, my guest is going to address that question. Joining me is George Barna, one of the most respected researchers and thought leaders on faith, culture, and worldview in America. As director of research at the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University, the founder of the Barna Group, George has spent decades studying the beliefs and behaviors shaping our nation. Today, we're going to unpack one of his most recent reports and discuss what it truly is like and what it's going to take for our country to experience real spiritual transformation and revival. George, welcome. Good to see you again.
Tim, I always love being with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, as we get started, George, a lot of people are saying faith is back in America. You know that, and Bible sales are soaring. People are talking about revivals happening on college campuses all over the country. We're seeing a lot of energy up on social media. People are talking openly about God and more. Just wondering, George, what do you think of what you're seeing and what are you hearing?
We are seeing that there are increases in certain faith-related activities. We are not in a place where revival is ready to happen. Before revival can happen, the church has to get its act together, and it really is not in that place right now.
George, you have launched a new report, 2026 report, via the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University. And I know you for years. George, you've pressed in on Christian worldview. It's important. Biblical worldview. Talk to us about the heart and soul of this research and what you're beginning to find that, quote, is producing this alarm, this concern.
When we look at biblical worldview across America, what we find is that only 4% of adults actually have a biblical worldview. And what that means is that they have the ability to think like Jesus, and that's important because you do what you believe. So if a disciple is somebody who imitates their master, you've got to act like that master. But in order to do that, because you do what you believe, you've got to think like that master first. So the fact that we've only got 4% of Americans who right now are demonstrating the capacity to think like Jesus is an issue. And by the way, as we study the six factors that Jesus gives us in the scriptures of what makes somebody a disciple, what we find is that that coincides with this number. We're at about 3 or 4% of adults in America who actually appear to meet the six criteria that Jesus gives us for people who will be his disciples. So that's an issue. And when we look at it demographically, what we find is that the younger a person is, the less likely they are to have a biblical worldview. When we look at it theologically, that is looking at different spiritual measurements, if we look, for instance, at where people attend churches, you would expect the numbers to be highest in places such as evangelical churches. The percentage of people who attend evangelical churches to have a biblical worldview has been cut in half in the last 6 years. It's down to 11%. And so as we look at all of these kinds of factors, and then we break worldview down into 8 different categories of perspective, we find important things like family and the value of life, or understanding God, creation, and history. Those numbers are low and dropping. They're the lowest of all. We look at things like belief in truth, And we know that most Americans don't believe there is such a thing as absolute moral truth, or that the Bible consistently contains truth. So we have some real fundamental basic issues that we've got to struggle with within the church if we're going to get back to a place where people are being who God wants them to be.
George, for a long time, we've had a friendship, and people often say, hey, what's Barna saying about this? What's the research showing? George, I want to make sure people understand who are listening right now that the research that you've conducted is pretty extensive. You put together a questionnaire that involves 53 items around worldview, examining both beliefs and behaviors. You want congruence here. There are people who say, yeah, I know God, I'm a Christian. And then there are people who are Christian. They don't just know about, they know God, and they want to live in congruence with their Father, with what the Scripture teaches and more, having a biblical worldview. You often refer to it as biblical theism. Just go a little bit deeper for our listeners about, hey, listen, this is important, and these things need to match up. This is what we're talking about when we, quote, examine biblical worldview.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's an issue where your worldview is your personal operating system for life. It's the filter that you have for every decision that you make, and it has been since you were a young child. It typically doesn't change much over the course of time. Typically, it only changes when you go through crisis. But what we know is that as we break down people's worldview, we've got these eight different categories of questions that we look at, both beliefs and behaviors within each category. But we're looking at things like people's purpose and calling. We're looking at different faith practices. And there it's not about, gee, do you attend church? That's not even one of the ones that we look at. What we're examining are things like, whose will are you following? How much time and how often do you try to understand God's will for your life? How important is that in the choices that you're making every day? We look at categories like Bible, truth, and morals, all of those having separate questions, trying to understand, what do you think about the Bible? What do you think about truth? What do you think about morality, and how do you practice it? And so, for instance, we find one of the big areas of disconnect related to morality. Christians talk a great moral game. Christians don't live a very good moral game. And there we're looking at things like sexual behavior. We're looking at identification, identity, personal identity. We're looking at things like transgenderism and so forth. Other categories having to do with human character and human nature, lifestyle, behavior, and relationships. Another category related to sin, salvation, and your relationship with God. As I mentioned before, the category of family and the value of life, or the category of your understanding of God and creation and history. All of those things together comprise your worldview. It's not just a simple thing of, yeah, do I believe that there's a higher power? Do I believe that Jesus died on the cross? Satan believes those things. What we're looking for are the conjunction between what you believe, how you take those beliefs and convert it into a lifestyle. And then are you actually taking that lifestyle, modeling it for other people, but being able to talk to them about why you live in that manner and trying to encourage them to do the same kind of things? That's why a biblical worldview is so important. You're not going to become a disciple of Jesus until you get that mindset of Jesus, until you can think like Jesus. So that's critically important.
George, what helped me understand your research was these classifications or these categories of those who claim to be Christian. You look at world citizens, emergent followers, and integrated disciples. Can you unpack a little bit around those? Because I think that's some clarity there.
Yeah, and let me also describe, because a lot of people get confused about how we measure this. I mean, in the assessment, we've got the 53 worldview-related questions, then we have others related to demographics and theolographics. But when we ask people these questions, we're not even asking them to be perfect. We're saying, look, if you get about 4 out of 5 of the belief questions right, and you get about 4 out of 5 of the behavioral questions consistent with what the Bible teaches, then we're going to class you as an integrative follower, meaning a person who has a biblical worldview. If you only get about 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 of those right in both beliefs and behavior, we're going to put you in the emergent follower category, meaning that you're above average. You know, but I'm not sure that God grades on a curve, so you want to do better than that. But you're at least leaning toward, or you're within vision of getting a biblical worldview. You know, you can work through this. If you get, you know, half or fewer of these right, it's kind of a chance worldview that you have. And in most cases, those people are what we would call syncretists. People who have taken a little bit of the Bible, people who have taken a little bit of Marxism, a little bit of secular humanism, a little bit of postmodernism, a little bit of nihilism, throwing it all together into a personal blend that feels comfortable, makes them feel secure, is easier to live with. So that's what a world citizen is. Somebody might even buy a couple of things out of the Bible, you know, be a loving person, be good to your neighbors, treat other people as you want to be treated. Beyond that, not so much. But those are where those three categories come from. So we're not looking for perfection. And in point of fact, when we look at the thousands of people that we interview for these studies, we find virtually nobody who has perfect answers to all of these questions. And so we're in that 80 to 100% range. But that's good enough that, yeah, we've got the momentum to do the things that Christ is calling us to do. We've got the momentum to want to try to get that other 5, 10, 15% right that we don't get now, because we want to think like Jesus. We've got that mindset, that heart set of, it's imperative that I become that kind of person.
So, George, you've been doing this research for a while. As we opened up the broadcast, you and I were talking about the spiritual energy that we're seeing in culture. There's some energy and excitement, but the concern is you're seeing a decline in what it means to be an integrated follower of Christ, someone who is a true disciple, someone who has a biblical worldview, someone who understands biblical theism. George, I've got to ask you, what are the factors? What's leading to this decline? Why have you pushed the alarm button?
Well, there are a lot of different things that we study, obviously, but some of the foundations are what's missing. We discovered in the research that there are 7 things called, what we call them, the 7 cornerstones of a biblical worldview, that if you really own those, you don't just give them intellectual assent, but you believe them. You believe them so deeply that you translate them into your lifestyle. That's owning these things. If you own these 7, then you have a high probability of becoming a follower of Christ. What we're finding is that people don't have a strong foundation. And so we know, for instance, that people don't believe in absolute moral truth. Only half of Americans believe in the God of the Bible. They may say that, yeah, there's a higher power, there's a supreme being, but when we describe the God of Scripture, they say, well, no, that's not who I'm buying into. We can look at things like sin, and we know that fewer and fewer Americans are buying into sin. We know that only 2%, 3%, excuse me, of Christian churches are significantly talking in their services, their events, their ministries about sin. And consequently, Americans are moving away from that. They're saying, well, yeah, I make mistakes, but I'm not a sinner. And that makes it harder for them to believe that Jesus is important for their life. Absolute moral truth, we're not buying into that. Purpose, we have 2 younger generations that are struggling with their purpose in life. And that's one of the things that's causing anxiety, depression, fear, suicidal thoughts, anger, all of that is building up inside of them because they don't know who they are. They don't know why they're here. They don't feel like they're being successful. Part of that latter thing is because they don't understand the biblical teaching about success, which is that it's not about achievements and accomplishments, about the goodies that you amass. It's about consistent obedience to God. We look at the fact that people are not willing to sacrifice to live a Christ-like life. And if you don't do that, you're not going to become a disciple, because discipleship requires sacrifice. It requires some suffering. It demands that you're going to be persecuted at some point, because you're not going to back off your love of and your obedience to Christ. And it has to do with taking the Bible at face value, what it says. You know, when it says that human life is important, that means, no, you can't have an abortion because having the child would be uncomfortable, because you're afraid the child might grow up with some kind of abnormalities. So all of these things come into play when we're looking at all of this. Yeah, there's a lot of religious energy in America today. But by the way, since Charlie Kirk's death, we're seeing that now on a downward spiral. And so we're really concerned that the church is not in a place where revival can happen. The church needs to be renewed before revival can happen. We had the opportunity for revival where that energy, that excitement, that curiosity built up. They came to the church. They came to Christians. We weren't ready for them. We don't have our own act together enough that they would look at it. And that's ultimately what it is, not just listening to the sermons, but watching. How has it affected the lives of these people? What's it doing in the culture through these people? And they're saying, yeah, I don't think it's important enough that I want to make the sacrifices that it's going to take to be a follower of Christ.
You're listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton. Our special guest today is George Barna. Needs no introduction. What's Barna say? That's important. What's the research showing? We're talking about his 2026 report via the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University on what's happening in American culture when it comes to biblical worldview. And it's concerning. I guess that's what you're meaning by this issue or crisis of Christian invisibility. George, you identify a group called Notional Christians, and I'm saying something like 53% of those who claim to be Christian fall in this category. Pretty low percentage of them actually have a biblical worldview. What, something like 0.1%? It's hard to believe that that's where we're at. What do you think? Go back to the church. I mean, are these people going to church? Are they listening on Sunday mornings? Is the church missing it? Is the church not delivering the goods? What's happening?
There are a lot of things that are going on in our churches that are not helping us to develop a biblical worldview. Number one, we're pretty pleased with ourselves when we talk with pastors about how effective they are in making disciples. More than 4 out of 5 of them say they're doing an excellent or very good job. That's simply not true. We're doing a terrible job. Now, what we are doing a good job at is having people take notes when we talk. But the problem is, discipleship is about transformation. It's not about information. And so we've gotten very good at transferring information from the teacher to the students. We're not very good at helping the students take that information and do something biblical with it. Take it and understand it, have it change our heart, have it change our belief structure such that it influences what we do with the information, how we live. And people on the outside of the church can look in and watch us and say, wow, they've taken a really different approach to how to handle money, how to handle relationships, how to deal with sexuality, what to believe politically, what to do inside the family structure, how to raise our children, all of these things and more. When we do our larger studies about the lifestyle of people who call themselves Christians, about the people who consistently attend churches, we find there's almost no difference between those people and people who have nothing to do with the Christian faith. And so we've really failed at this translation process, taking the information and translating it into a Christ-like existence. Part of that is that churches aren't doing a good job of that. Part of it is that because parents haven't been trained by churches to know what to do with it, they're not raising up children who know what to do with it. And with their worldview being developed by the age of 13, they're going to run with this same worldly approach, syncretistic approach, that cut-and-paste approach to worldview, where you take a little bit of everything and you build something that's comfortable, but it's not Christ-like. And so it really is an issue where, if we go back to Esther and you know, the phrase, we're here for such a time as this, we are here for such a time as this if we're disciples. We have to make sure that that is absolutely our top priority, and that we recognize the only people who can make disciples, because we always reproduce who we are, the only people who therefore can make disciples are disciples. And we've got to get really busy and really serious about that, and not just think of it as an optional activity.
So in a lot of ways, George, you can look at the breakdown of the family, the loss of time and connectedness, being together, transmission of values, and so much more. Nature hates a vacuum, so does a child's soul. If it's not filled with the noble sentiments of virtue and more, it'll be filled with something else. William Bennett said that years ago. And George, same way in the church, as we, quote, are to grow spiritually. If we're just placating, creating Disneyland Sundays, and people are not absorbing the whole counsel of God, they're getting lost. And the real challenge here, George, isn't it's this breakdown of discipleship piece, but in my mind, the real challenge is not that they won't believe. The problem right here is that they will believe anything. And then you start hearing all kinds of people debating up on social media. Well, this is where I'm at. This is what I believe. This is where I'm at. You do you, I'll do me, that kind of thing. And truth, it sets the stage for Marxism and all kinds of things to creep into culture and the church, ultimately.
And we live in a time when 6 out of 10 self-identified Christians believe they have a biblical worldview. And yet, as we know, most of them do not. So we're fooling ourselves into thinking we're people that we're not. It's kind of like that book that came out years ago from the NYU professor, Musing Ourselves to Death. And that's pretty much what we're doing. We're fooling ourselves to spiritual death, thinking that we're people that truly we're not.
We've got work to do. George, always a delight to have a conversation with you. If people want to learn more about this latest research that's just come out, maybe how to get a copy of Raising Spiritual Champions and more, where can they go?
Yeah, they can get Raising Spiritual Champions on Amazon. And all of our research, we put it online for free. People can download it either at georgebarna.com, and there are a lot of other books available there as well on these issues. Or they can go to culturalresearchcenter.com, which is part of Arizona Christian University, which is where all this research comes from.
I love it, George. Hey, always delightful to have a conversation with you. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. On behalf of our entire team here at Life, Love, Faith, and Family, we salute you. All the good work, by the way, that's going on at Arizona Christian University and the Barna Group. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
This is Dr. Shawnee Anderson, and I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who's been in practice for over 30 years. In my clinical experience, one of the hardest parts for someone struggling with their mental health is the very first step, the just reaching out for help part. I understand that asking for help is hard, but finding that help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, the mission is to make it easier to find a Christian clinician or coach who is compatible with you, someone you feel comfortable with, who shares your faith and values. Whether you're walking through grief, battling anxiety or depression, or facing any other of life's challenges, excellent mental health care providers are here to come alongside you with support that is both clinically excellent and distinctly Christian. If you or someone you know is looking for help and healing, we invite you to take that next step today. Go to ChristianCareConnect.com to find a provider within 100 miles of you. For further support or questions, you can email us at contact@ChristianCareConnect.com. A new way to start your journey to wellness and peace of mind.
Don't miss the 2026 AACC Faith and Flourishing Mega National Conference, with a special emphasis on neuroscience and brain health. Coming to the Lowe's Arlington Hotel in Arlington, Texas, in September 2026. Featuring world-leading and dynamic experts like Daniel Amen, George Barna, Jack Graham, Sungyung Tan, Sharon May, Kurt Thompson, Jennifer Ehlers, Shawnee Anderson, Zach Clinton, Tim Clinton, and more. Join counselors, psychologists, marriage and family therapists, pastors, ministry leaders, and coaches from around the world. Register now for the best savings at nationalaacc.com. That's nationalaacc.com. The 2026 AACC Faith and Flourishing Mega National Conference.